Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, bringing you another whiff of worse is better for now. Hey, it's July the 19th, 2014, Saturn's Day. Yeah. We're at P.O. Box 401, as usual, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for our work and our radio show and so forth. So I think most of you are in there for July, so that's good. Like to get them in a little early, and then we can see exactly how much we've got to pay the little bills we have around here, you know, like our website bill. Website bill's $160 a month for all you people who are interested in that. Then, of course, we have our postage. We have our internet service here at the house. Of course, that's extra beyond the website. And lots of little odds and ends. It adds up. We don't need enough money to go down and gamble on the Mississippi like David Duke, or go skiing in the Alps, or go get a ha-ha doctorate degree over there in Austria. We don't need that kind of money. We're going to spend all our time digging around to see what the hell's going on here, and especially what's going on in the United States. The hell's this deal with Dookie over there, Plastic Man? He running around Europe all the time. Why don't he come home where he's supposed to be? Well, I don't know. Maybe better off. Anyhow, I don't want to talk about Plastic Man. But I do want to talk about my friend Carlos Whitlock Porter, who was an American who, I believe, either renounced his citizenship or just plain moved over to Europe. And I believe the last I heard, he was living in France. He got in touch with me and wanted to use some of our A. Wyatt Mann cartoons in a new book he was putting out. And we said, sure, no problem. And also, I want to remind you people, everybody, or a lot of people, think that those cartoons were created by Wyatt Kaldenberg, who was one of our compadres there for quite a while. But no, Wyatt cannot draw. It was not Wyatt, and it was not me. It was a professional who we kept, did everything we could to keep his name secret. He was a professional that worked in Hollywood for many years, and he's not there anymore. He's retired, and he cannot do the cartoons anymore because of arthritis in his hands. He's getting up there in age, and so anyhow. But he did so many of them, such great ones. And so this new book called Satires, S-A-T-I-R-E-S, by Carlos Porter, who's somewhat of a revisionist, he wanted those cartoons for the book. And now the book is, let me see here, it's... The book is 133 pages, so it's not a great big thick book. It's a paperback. And I was looking around here for an address to order the book, but I'll have to get to Carlos and see. If you want to ask him direct, just go to www.cwporter.com. Because if you send orders for this book to my P.O. box, I don't have any of these books except the sample that he sent me, complimentary copy. So he's the ISBN on this book is 978-1-291-56346-7. And like I say, you can go to www.cwporter.com PORTER.com, and tell them Tommy sent you. Terrible Tommy sent you. I haven't read the book yet, but I think it's going to be a great one. A great one, because I think he combines humor with serious stuff, and then the cartoons in there, too. Hell, it's worth that for the cartoons. How about that? Now, I had Stray Dog get on my back last couple of days. He said, Tom, there's a hum on your radio show. And I kept sending the show up to upstairs to another computer, and then I'd listen to it, and for the life of me, I didn't hear that hum. I don't know what's wrong there, but I checked with She-Wolf Southern California, and she said, yeah, there's a hum on there. And so I was wrong, because I told Stray Dog, no, I can't hear anything wrong. And okay, Stray Dog, you're vindicated. And by the way, when are you going to get back on here and do a live show? Oh, that leads me to an announcement. Monday, this coming Monday, I don't have my calendar right here in front of me. Let's see, that would be 21st, I believe, yeah. Guess what? Sling Blade's coming back on live, and we're going to try to do it once a week. And so we haven't done a show together for a long time. He's done a hell of a lot of shows. I got them stacked up here in the corner. But we haven't done one together for a long time, so that's going to be our big surprise for Monday. That's right. You've probably seen a lot of this crybaby stuff from Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, who is sort of a mulatto guy with a mustache, sort of a replacement for Janet Reno, the war criminal who killed all those kids and adults out in Waco, Texas. She's the one that implemented all this stuff against supposed domestic terrorists, and she used the Oklahoma City bombing as an excuse. But before that, she'd already killed, 200 people there in Waco. But she used the bombing in Oklahoma City as an excuse to start chasing militia people and all that kind of stuff around. Well, I told the militia people a long time ago, don't come out in the open like that. You guys standing around and let them take your pictures with guns and everything like that. But you can't teach those people anything. Once in a while, somebody gets the message and gets out of that kind of stuff. Somebody just sent me a expose on the skinheads and so forth up in Portland, Oregon, and up that way, and their opponents have got pictures of all of them standing there proudly with their racist T-shirts on, and maybe a gun here and there and like that. And what are you going to do? I tell these young people, do not come out in the open like that. Do not get your pictures taken with these other people in these groups and so forth. But you see, if I can't control it, then I don't care, like I said yesterday, since I can't control it. And some of these young people are not too young anymore. One of them was, I forget his name, that was convicted in the Milagueta Serra thing at about the same time I was, and he served, I think, about 10 years at least in prison, got out and doing the same damn thing. I mean, you know, as far as exposing himself to all his enemies. So these commies for mommy, they just hang around and have somebody infiltrate these deals and take everybody's picture, and then they turn them over to the cops and the feds. Everybody's got them. So you're through. You're technically through as a high-level unconventional warfare possibility person. So, but anyhow, if we can't control it and they don't respect it, well, then we don't care. We don't care. But on some of these people, I know I'll be getting mail from some prison here one of these days. Maybe 1 year, maybe 6 months, maybe 5 years. But they'll screw around and get themselves in there, and then they'll say, "Gee, terrible Tommy, I should have listened to you. Now I'm going to listen to you now." And I say, "Well, it doesn't do any good to listen to me now. You're in the clink. You can't do anything. You're totally out of action. And as far as starting gangs and stuff in prison, forget it. You know, defend yourself. Yeah, maybe two or three other guys help you defend yourselves like that. But don't get involved inside the prisons with these prison gangs that say they're racist, and they may have a swastika tattooed on their arm, but in reality, they probably went in there for child molesting or something. I mean, you don't know. These guys that write me tell them, I'm down for the race from prison. I don't know about these guys. How do I know? I can't control anything in the prison. Neither can you. I can send them a little bit of information. I can send them some propaganda. But as far as knowing exactly who they are and what their crimes were and what they're into and whether they're into A, B, and all that kind of stuff, hell, I don't know, so I'm straight out honest about it. I tell them, that's not my bailiwick. You can't control what goes on out here, and I have no control over what goes on in there. So just keep clean, do your time, and get out. Maybe next time you'll listen to old Terrible Tommy. I get letters from old Dennis Mahon crying the blues, but he walked right into that crap. I'm not saying he did what they accused him of or not. I don't know. Who knows? Now old Dennis tells me he's the head of the AA group in the prison. Well, he should have been the head of the AA group before he went in, because he was drinking all the time and getting drunk all the time, and that's what led him to partially to get in trouble. And then being open to any woman that came down the road, they've tried to slip informant in on him, spy at least two or three other times. It's a wonder they didn't get him then on something. But another case where, now I knew the Mahon brothers for, well, I don't know, 20, 25 years. But when you get right down to it, Dennis Mahon didn't listen to me at all, because he did just the opposite of everything I told him not to do. Yeah, let some flaky prostitute type of ATF informant set him up is stupid. It's stupid, and I've told him so. I'm not doing this behind his back. I write him a letter and tell him exactly what I think. And as far as an appeal, I pretty much told him, you're whistling Dixie, because chances are 1 in 1,000 that you'd ever get a positive result on an appeal. So anyhow, it's sad, and it's frustrating, and it causes me all kinds of anguish when I think of guys that are doing time that didn't need to do time. Now sometimes something happens you can't do much about, you know, like poor old what's his name down in Florida, good old COTC member, who a big old nigger come at him, and he's sitting in his car, and he come at him with a big stone or a big cement block to crash through his window and get him, and he just took his gun and shot the guy to death. Now, I don't have every paper or anything from the actual trial of really exactly what happened, but I'm sure this could happen in this big deal we've got about the nigger's always right and the white guy's always wrong. But sometimes you can't avoid a situation and you get hammered. And you must learn to try to avoid situations. I mean, a lot of times guys walk into things that they should know better, on the street, in a bar, things like that. You got to know when to fish and when to cut bait. And I've told you this story before about a guy I knew in Southern California who used to go in and get a beer in a bar once in a while, or maybe every day, I don't know. But anyhow, one day he stood up on the table or on the bar and yelled, "I'm a good American, give me liberty or give me death." And some guy shot him. I mean, you know, when you do things like that and you're out there maybe looking for trouble, you're going to find trouble. Sean Walker got in that situation up there in Washington State, I believe it was. And you can scream you're set up all you want, but he got into a fight with, I guess, some kind of an illegal alien Mexican. And, of course, they used his connections with National Alliance to get him, because if you're connected to any kind of group like that and you're very well known by the federales, they're going to zero in on you and they're going to get you. And Sean did, what, 4 or 5 years? I don't know what happened to him now, because when you get out, they put you on probation or parole and say you can't have any contact with any known racist. Well, maybe that's a good thing, because Lone Wolf operates that way. We don't have lots of observable contact with anybody. I mean, I'm talking about around here in this town or in this state. I have not cultivated people to join anything. They all know what the website is. They can go up there and read all they want. Or they can come up to me like the other night in the hotel lounge where my gal and I was having some hors d'oeuvres and a couple of drinks, and come up and shake my hand and thank me for what I do. But that's as far as it goes. You're better off to have these quiet supporters around, because when the shit hits the fan, these quiet supporters, and there's a lot of them out there, but they're not going to be stupid and get involved. And maybe they don't even have the guts to get involved right now, but when the crap hits the fan, they're going to come looking for somebody to give them a little bit more information. Now, it may not be me, but there's other people around that can do it. So, anyhow, if you don't listen, you'll have to feel, is what my grandma said. And that's the truest thing you'll ever hear. If you don't listen, you'll have to feel. And if you put your head in the lion's mouth, in his jaws, and expect him not to close those jaws and those teeth on your head or on your neck, you're crazy. You know? If you play with fire, you get burned. So if you're going to play with fire, you got to be really, really, really smart. Smarter than the average bear. And you don't talk to anybody about anything. And you don't talk to your wife. And you don't talk to your kids about it. And you don't talk in your sleep about it. So, if you're deciding to get involved in that kind of activity, you got to understand that. If you go on the run, you can't go to some person that you've been involved with in the struggle. Like the order taking off from the Northwest in a caravan of about, I don't know, 5 or 10 cars and a 40-foot trailer, while they're number one on the hit parade of the famous but incompetent, traveling clear across the United States to Missouri and then to that Sworden Arm and all that shit of the Lord, place where the feds already had staked out and they had informants inside. Of course, the very worst place to go would have been there. you know. Hide in the sea of the people, if you have to hide. Swim in the sea of the people, like Mao Zedong said. And maybe go into the ghetto and hang out, you know, like the Oakland Suicide Squad, living right in the middle of the nigger ghetto. And nobody bothered him. Anyhow, let's see what else is going on today. You know, you're reading the paper every day or hear on the news about these so-called Americans that go overseas and get into trouble and get arrested and all that kind of stuff. And most of the time, they'll tell you, they'll just say Americans. But in many cases, in many, many cases, these are hyphenated Americans that have come here just in the last decade or so. Like Arab Americans and Palestinian Americans and Nicaraguan Americans and, you know, Podunk Americans. Then they have this habit of, you know, they say there's total allegiance to the United States and the United States is the most wonderful place in the world. But then they have this thing about carrying their problems that they've had before in the old country with them. And a lot of these younger people, then they go back into the belly of the beast and start causing problems or raising hell, and then it's in the news again. Americans arrested, Americans killed, you know. Well, Israel now denies that Americans teaching volunteers denied them entry into the West Bank. Well, a group of American volunteers sponsored by the American Federation of Ramallah were denied entry into Palestine by Israeli border officers at the King Hussein Bridge on July 8th. The tour leader, Terry Awal, good Irish name, detailed to Al Monitor the humiliating six-hour experience that 15 Arab Americans ages 17 to 28 faced by Israeli officials. The visit, part of Project Hope, well, the best way to smuggle terrorists around is call them a name like that. Project Hope, that doesn't mean shit. I mean, you know, a project bringing volunteers to Palestine was coordinated by the U.S. State Department and the White House, according to Awal. She said that the U.S. missions of Amman, Jerusalem, and Tel Aviv were aware of the visit. Well, I'm certainly not going to be a proponent for Israel, but if you're in the Israeli security and these people come over here from the United States thinking they got the world by the ass and they're from Arab stock, what the hell do you think's going to happen? Of course they're going to work you over with a fine-tooth comb. And let's face it, the only people that can free the Palestinians are the Palestinians. Now, I don't know why they didn't stick to their original plan, and that was right Yasser Arafat when in the beginning when he was kicking ass and taking names. They were gaining a lot back then. But now they go to all these countries with hat in hand and please help us. And you get 1,000 people out there demonstrating for the Palestinians. And the Israelis say, we don't give a shit. We want to kick their ass, we'll kick their ass. And you're not going to do anything about it. And they don't do anything about it. So for people to come from the United States or any place else, expatriates, and they're going to save the indigenous people there, they're bloodline is stupid. It rarely works. Rarely works. So the Palestinian people, they have to figure a way of taking care of the problem. And it's not shooting these worthless pieces of shit rockets that are not much more than 4th of July rockets, you know. I mean, they hardly ever do any real damage. And the Israelis use that as an excuse to bomb the shit out of them. I think that is weird. I mean, let's face it. If you're shooting off rockets with almost no effect. And that's giving the other side the excuse to bomb the shit out of you and kill people in the houses and knock the buildings down. Why do it? I mean, do something, but don't do that. That don't make sense. It gives the Israeli people a total excuse to come after you. Now, as far as the excuse of these three dead Jew kids, anybody could have done that. The Mossad could have done that. Oh, you don't think the Mossad would do that? Are you kidding? Just like this plane that went down on eastern Ukraine. Evidently, the pilot got the message to lower his elevation and divert into another direction, which was right over where the whatever hit him. Oh, come on. But then Obama and all these people are so anti-Russian. Everything now is just like it was with the Soviet Union. Everything's a communist. Everything in the world that goes wrong is a communist. Now everything that goes wrong is the Russians. It's the Russians did it. It's Putin's doing it. Well, technically, Putin would be within his so-called natural rights to kick their ass over there because they're putting NATO right on the border of Russia, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which should have been disbanded decades ago, and then expect Putin to be happy about it, or Putin not to. Here's a country, Ukraine, it's right on their borders, just like the Crimea, and they expect Russia not to have any influence or any internal influence or anything like that. That's totally stupid, of course. No, they want another Cold War. I don't think they really want a hot war, but these idiots like to have smaller Cold War type situations, but those Cold Wars can very quickly develop into a hot war. You're playing Russian roulette, which is a good term for it. It's Russian roulette. It's like playing poker, and it's dangerous, extremely dangerous. But you and I have no power in this country or in the Ukraine. We have very little finances. Nobody gives a shit what we think. So what do we care? Like I said yesterday, what do we care? If the Palestinian people won't rise up and do what has to be done, and, you know, they had all those human bombers before, they start human bombing right into downtown Israel, or Tel Aviv and the shopping centers and stuff, the shit would hit the fan. You don't know exactly how it would hit the fan, but it would be, of course, as far as unconventional warfare, far more effective than shooting these 4th of July rockets over there that do hardly any damage at all. And the Ukraine. Now, my opinion, and which is not worth 2 cents, really, except maybe with you guys, this Russian separatist thing in the East was not thought out very well. Now, I know that the Kiev government is corrupt as hell and like that, but they do have the entire weight of the NATO behind them, and at least partially EU behind them. So you're not going to be able to divide off a part of Ukraine without getting your ass kicked. And I would say that they should have bided their time and got rid of that corrupt president that has taken over there, because he's going to fuck up everything. You know, he's the billionaire chocolate maker. What does a billionaire chocolate maker know about running that kind of a system? Anyhow, because he would become far more oppressive fast as the EU and the United States keeps extracting through the corporations all the goodies out of the Ukraine, which that's what they really want. And so then everybody in the Ukraine that's working class would arose up against the Kiev government. Sometimes I think that this kind of stuff is well planned on both sides. Even Putin, you know. I don't trust any leader of any country in the world. I wouldn't trust any of them. And since, like I say, we have no control, there's nobody that I can think of we could kill right now that would make a big change. If there was, I might think about it, but there isn't, because there's so many corrupt people and so many traitors in the world that you knock one off and they got 15 more, maybe 1,000 more to take their place. Stand on their bodies to see what all the shouting's about, as Johnny Cash said. Yeah, so your best power now is the power of silence, your power of digging deep and taking that submarine down to periscope depth and be all around but not be very detectable. That is our power. That is our only power we have. And that it's interesting. That's what the right wing attacks all the time. All that Tom Metzger, he's crazy. He believes in lone wolf. He believes in independent agents, secret people around ready to do whatever has to be done in any way they can do it. Sometime, someday, today, 2 years, 5 years from now. Oh, that could never work. Well, it seems like it works in a lot of other countries. It seems like it works. Anyhow, the right wing's full of bullshit, just like the left. And most of those two movements are more interested in collecting money than anything else, so that a few of these hee-hos and can be sitting there doing pretty good. I remember all through the years, most of the right-wing leaders that I knew were living pretty high on the hog. They were always driving new cars and things like that, cars I couldn't afford. So there's money in the right wing, there's money in the left wing, plus a bunch of stupid people like the people that follow Alex Jones, you know. People send me stuff that Alex Jones has said. Well, the clock's right twice a day, right? So Alex Jones is right once in a while, but he's crazy. And he's making a lot of money. He's making mucho money. And he, like guys like him that have come before, gradually fade into the woodwork. When their use is done, they'll just disappear, retire to their big houses out in the country and play golf, just like Rush Scumbaugh. They bring these guys on and they play their game for years, serving one side or the other, and then they quietly take them out the back door. So if you're listening to all that kind of stuff to get to take it all in, you're wasting a lot of time. Now, if you're listening to stuff to pick out little pieces that are important to our overall goals, then that's fine. I listen to a lot of wackos from time to time, because woven into the conversation sometimes is something, a little nugget of gold, you know, like the chickens out in the barnyard pecking around in a pile of cow shit because they know there's... there's some corn kernels in there that they want to get. And even though it's a disgusting job of going through, pecking around through all this cow shit, they know that there's enough food in there in the form of corn kernels that can keep them alive. And so That's sort of where we're at, boys and girls. That's sort of where we're at. Now, I got something here. It's another one of these. I don't care because I can't do anything about it. And if the people in the area won't do anything about it, as far as destroying the environment, in fact, most places, they're championing destroying the environment, letting these big fracking companies come in and all this kind of stuff. And if you went in there and tried to stop them, they'd try to kill you because it gives them jobs, so they can watch TV, drink beer, and go to football games and stuff like that. So if you're going to save the environment, everybody can't have a job. And the same people that ship the jobs out and the corporations out are the same people you're protecting, like the big coal mine people. Yeah. Well, let me see what I got here, and I'll play it for you, and you'll see what I'm talking about. We'll see what that old rogue progressive has to say. And don't get me wrong, a third or half of the stuff he says is not important to us at all because they're based upon equality and all that kind of bullshit. But he does do a good job of digging out some things that we should know about. Whether we can do anything about it is very questionable, and probably not, but we should know about it.
And Kate, impersonator. Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Mike. Am I impersonating well enough?
You're doing a great job.
I can't do Barack or anything. But...
No, but you do Bob Kincaid pretty good. How you doing, pal?
Pretty good. I just got to thinking that when you opened up the phone lines, this is something I overlooked earlier this evening. We've been sort of immersed in all this international horror. It might be handy to remind folks that we've got some of the domestic variety, too.
Yeah.
And we can go for a wallow in that. Remember the Freedom Industries disaster?
I do indeed, where nobody had anything to drink for a while in the better part of West Virginia.
It's back.
What?
It's kind of back. They've gone through the long and painstaking process of dismantling the Freedom Industries tank farm.
Right.
And so they couldn't see what was inside the tanks until they took the tanks apart.
Yeah.
And when they took the tanks apart, Mike, what they found out is that the tanks that were holding the methylchlorohexane methanol were almost entirely corroded. And so now the Chemical Safety Board says that they just really can't say how long that stuff was actually leaking into the water.
Oh, for God's sake. So what does this mean for the health of people downstream from that little chamber of horror?
It means what it continues to mean. Nobody knows. But what's even more fun is that it means that people were probably consuming this either aerially or hydrologically for days, weeks,
oh my God,
months. Who knows?
What are the expected and I was going to say and unexpected, but you can't answer. What are the expected results of drinking water that has this? Well, you said the word, and I couldn't even begin to repeat it. This chemical
poison works. Poison.
Poison. That'll work. Okay.
Well, because of the fact that almost none of the chemicals that are used every day in the United States have been in any way analyzed for human safety, it's another one of those I don't know. But we do know from the anecdotal evidence of the human beings who were made test subjects unwittingly, involuntarily, and immorally, that, for instance, a person with MS mm-hmm. who had a feeding tube.
Right.
And had this water, this poisoned water used to flush their GI tube,
mm-hmm.
it induced immediate diarrhea and vomiting.
Oh, God.
That was uncontrollable. We know that babies who had their formula made with this stuff became immediately sick. And what we don't know is, I feel like Donald Rumsfeld, which is a picky thing to say.
Right.
You know, it's those known knowns and those unknown knowns and those unknown unknowns.
Right.
What we don't know is what it's going to be like when somebody who was a newborn is sitting at the doctor's office as, say, a teenager, and the doctor says, well, the reason you've been feeling lethargic is you have cancer, and no one knows why.
Yeah, and you know, and we all know, that's going to happen. When was this news shared with people in West Virginia?
Of the corrosion?
Yeah, the latest.
This broke yesterday.
Yesterday. And I haven't looked at a whole lot of national media, and what I have seen, everything is pushed over some other place because of Ukraine and the Middle East. Is anybody reporting on this on national media? I'm sure the West Virginia media are reporting on it.
The folks at the Charleston Gazette are doing a magnificent job. And if I could plug their website, it's wvgazette.com. And they're doing a great reporting job. They should probably get a Pulitzer out of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I am not aware of any national reporting on this at the moment.
Well, do you have a sense of, other than standard outrage and shock, how folks are reacting to having found this out?
There's a pocket of people who are active and enraged, furious. But for the most part, this, and I was having this conversation externally earlier today, there are so many, actually had it on air, there are so many people that are, I guess, subsumed in what is a statewide Stockholm syndrome, that there's really not much of anything going on. The question that I've posed time after time after time after time, Mike, is 300,000 people got their water poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
Why were not 1% of those 300,000 people forming a human chain around the capital of the state of West Virginia on January the 10th, 2014?
I know, and your question was never answered.
No, it wasn't. And so, I mean, the little details, the deviling details that attend all of this, consider that water system. Most people don't know it, but if you're a water system, you have to report to government,
right,
how much of the water that you pump out of your facility into the community,
mm-hmm,
actually reaches end users. Before the crisis that hit on January 9th, the disaster, West Virginia American Water, a privately owned, for-profit, stock-traded company, reported that they had up to 30% loss of pumped water in the year prior to January 9th.
Good Lord.
So that means that the ground itself,
mm-hmm,
from West Virginia American Water's pumping station in Charleston, West Virginia, all the way out to nine counties, has 30% of that pump poison in it, with no way to get at it, no way to know what it's doing to human beings, and no way to remediate.
I don't know what to say. Some of this stuff just leaves me completely speechless.
Mike, I lived in Atlanta for a time.
Uh-huh.
That was when I first started listening to you, you know, back when we were both riding our dinosaurs at CNN.
Right.
And I remember going on a float trip with a buddy of mine, because I lived just across US 41 bridge in near Vining.
Right.
And my apartment complex looked out on the Chattahoochee River.
Right.
Which you can pretty much walk across because it's not very deep.
Yeah, there are parts that's very true.
And I remember thinking, my God, part of the public water supply, and this is 1986,
mm-hmm,
part of the public water supply of this massive metropolitan area is served by this relatively tiny river.
Well, you did figure out, of course, that it wasn't the river level was not that low all the time. I mean, the Chattahoochee is a mighty river, and you're right, it does provide water for Metro Atlanta, possibly more so now than when you lived here. But the reservoirs that feed into, you know, when water's released by the Corps of Engineers that feed into the Chattahoochee, is sufficient for the city's needs. Now, for people downstream in Alabama and Florida, this is a reason, one of the reasons, if not the major reason, that Apalachicola, Florida, the oyster business down there has disappeared because the water now is diverted into Atlanta, all of it, through the Chattahoochee, or 90% of it. I'm just picking numbers out of the air, a vast amount of it, which means that the mixture of fresh and salt water that's necessary to be the nurseries for these little baby oysters has been changed to the point where the oyster industry is dead. I guess you're aware of that.
Actually, sadly, yes, because I'm a huge oyster fan.
Right.
But just to revisit my larger overarching question, if the mayor of Atlanta, let's say that, you know, up where the water intake is, if the mayor of Atlanta was told, hey, terrorists have thrown 10,000 gallons of methylchlorohexane methanol in the, what do you reckon the mayor of Atlanta would do, right?
Kasim Reed would probably call out the Georgia National Guard. I'm not sure, but the mayor of Atlanta, Kasim Reed, has a reputation of doing something when a situation comes up that immobilizes other politicians. I would imagine there would be bells and whistles and screams and sirens and warnings and, you know?
Well, do you think he would say something besides, don't drink the water, but we're going to let it keep flowing through your home?
Yes. Yes, he would.
And that's what we got.
That's what you... Jesus. Hey, hold on a minute. Wait, I got to do a commercial. All right?
Sure.
All right, just stay there, Bob. We're talking with Bob Kincaid. For people who don't know, he is a program host himself on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That's how you can listen to Bob every afternoon. At what time? Six?
6 to 9.
6 till 9. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. You can find it on your friendly Chinese-made computer. Now, where were we?
I think we were.
You asked me about Kasim Reed, yeah, the mayor of Atlanta.
Right, yeah.
He would go berserk, and heads would roll. There would be hell to pay. I don't know him like a brother, but I certainly do know him. I've had conversations with him back when he was a member of Atlanta City Council. So I'm pretty secure in saying he would just become rabid about this. But your mayor didn't do that, huh?
Mayor Schmayer, our governor didn't do anything.
I mean, you're
Charleston.
Right, your governor.
The seat of government is at Charleston. Republicans and Democrats were poisoned alike. It was indiscriminate. The second district congresswoman who is now running for Senate, a woman by the name of Shelley Moore Capito, laughed about it and said, it's really quite funny, you know?
And is she a Democrat by chance?
No, she's a Republican.
Is she?
And she is going to whip the tar out of her Democratic challenger, a youngish woman by the name of Natalie Tennant, who is running for Senate against her and trying to outlove the coal industry against her.
Oh, my God.
In the few minutes remaining, I'll say, Mike, that I heard you the other night when you were evincing your manifest frustration with the two-party politics. And I understand that completely because I've got two Senate candidates, neither of whom will even acknowledge that there's a health crisis in southern West Virginia because they're scared of the coal industry.
That's astonishing to me on the one hand. On the other, it is in perfect alignment with how corrupt most of us know this political system has become, A, B, and how unfixable, unrepairable it is. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And I don't, you know, who knows how many people are going to have to be sacrificed literally to this system before the ones who are not sacrificed at any given moment realize what's going on you know, when the chickens realize that when they walk up that ramp, they're going to have their heads cut off. How many have to go up that ramp before the chickens down in the pen say, "Hold on a second, boss"?
And we've got at least an estimate here in West Virginia.
Yeah,
4,000 people. They're called statistical excess deaths. And I know that sounds a little clinical, but 4,000 statistical excess deaths happen in West Virginia's mountaintop removal communities every year. 4,000 grannies, 4,000 daddies, 4,000 little girls, little boys, aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers, kitties.
So the
they answer, die every year.
So the answer,
every year.
The answer is the chickens will just keep walking up the ramp.
I reckon. Unless the few of us chickens who are standing at the bottom of the ramp screaming, you know, to serve man, it's a cookbook,
yeah.
Until somebody finally pays attention.
Are you generally, in all my conversations with you and hanging out with you, I found you to be a much more optimistic person than I. And I'm just wondering how you maintain that.
Well, I would hate to suggest drugs and alcohol for anyone else, but they've always worked for me. No, that's Hunter Thompson. But it's wearing off, Mike. It's wearing off real fast.
Yeah, well, I notice the change when I see you on MSNBC and I listen to the intensity. I've heard that intensity in conversations between you and me, but when I see you show that intensity to, you know, whomever might be watching or the program host, I think, I'm getting a feeling that Bob is, like you just said, maybe Bob's supply of optimism is depleting rather rapidly. And I don't know if I say, "Yay, all right, Bob," or if I say, "Oh, Jesus, Bob, no, not you, too." You know what I'm saying?
I guess it transforms into a certain amount of grim determination.
Well, let's hope that that's how it works. I don't know how it's working for me or people that listen to my show or your show. I just don't, you know, I don't know anymore. It's just very difficult for me to get an assessment because I hear what you say about the people in West Virginia, 4,000 statistically excess deaths or whatever you called it. And they will beat the asses of anyone who suggests that the coal industry should leave West Virginia.
Or that we should even acknowledge a problem. See, that's how bad it is, Mark.
Well, that's the part.
Nobody's demanding that Natalie Dimmitt running for Senate against this Republican Moore woman.
Right.
Nobody's suggesting that she has to scream death to all coal miners.
Right.
We just want her to acknowledge that there's a problem. You know, step one in the 12-step program. We acknowledged there was a problem and we'd become powerless over it.
Well, Alec, the American legislative, whatever the hell it is, the Koch brothers thing has probably already targeted her and she'll soon be gone. Hey, Bob, I'm just about out of time. I'm down to 20 seconds. I just wanted to say.
Well, there you go. And I'm sorry for the quality of the phone call calling in. That's not our equipment today. Stray Dog, it's not us. It's his cell phone probably being sabotaged by the coal industry down there in West Virginia. But you see, this stuff is going on all over the country. It's not just in one area. I mean, they're destroying the environment all over this country. And they are the corporations. I mean, the fracking, the whole bit. And like I said before, there are people in communities that have organized in support of fracking because they can make a little bit of money off of it. Well, if money's the name of the game, which it seems to be, forget the environment. It's all over. But I know I'm investigating the water company that controls the water of the town I live next to, even though I'm on a well. Doesn't directly affect me, but it probably will somehow someday when they probably try to move the city limits out another half mile or a mile and suck me into the city. Then I think it's about time I get in an RV and take off if that happens. But anyhow, you should go down to your city halls, find out who owns your water. And most of the time, it's not going to be anything local. It's going to be controlled by a corporation somewhere else in the country, and maybe not even in this country. Because, look, United States corporations control water in countries all over the world. They have absolute dictatorial power over water in certain countries, like they finally had the expose on Colombia in South America. So, anyhow, now you see, here is an example of the what you would call the extreme left. I mean, they're so these guys are so far left that most left-wingers don't even pay attention to them. The Jewish left. But you see their attitude now, you see they're beginning to get to the basis of, well, what are we going to do? I mean, you know, if the people don't care enough to demonstrate and raise hell and storm the Bastille, what are you going to do? I mean, you know, you can scream and yell, and I guess it's good to keep on screaming and yelling, but as far as putting yourself in harm's way against these super corporations with their goon squads, and that includes the FBI who work for the corporations. That's how the FBI got started in the first place, through United States Steel, before there ever was an FBI. And, well, anyhow, that's something you should look into, too, if you want to read a little filthy history of how that evolved. But anyhow, it's, you know, you can talk all day long about how much trouble the Negroes are causing or the Mestizos are causing, but in the long run, the environment is a bigger problem, even though they're all problems. I mean, because if the water goes bad through fracking and all that kind of stuff, and you run out of water, that's it. You know, lights out. Take the flag. You know, Las Vegas is looking at that possibility right now, as towns all over Texas are running out of water. California run out of water. You've heard me talk about that. So people don't seem to be care. They're worried more about what's happening in the Ukraine. They're more worried and watching more TV about what's going on in Palestine and Israel than they are what's going on right in their backyard. So anyhow, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Remember, one of the synonyms for care is worry, and worry is debilitating. And if you don't act and you just worry, you're going to give yourself ulcers. Act in some way. Well, to close out the show, let's do a little bit on the Out of the Good Book. Yeah, Out of the Good Book. Might is right. Heredity has ever so much more to do with social conditions than the majority of modern men are willing to admit. Judging by results that nations ignore birth and breeding at their peril. For just as there are noble animals, there are noble men. If a stock raiser throws down his dividing fences and permits all his cattle to mix up promiscuously together, what kind of herd would he have, say, in one decade? Nothing but weeds, hybrids, and mongrels. Now, that is exactly what nations attempt when they endeavor to establish an equality of privileges of happy, peaceful conditions. The close psychological connection that exists between ancestry and degeneracy, crime, genius, insanity, and so on, is now everywhere being acknowledged. Well, not enough. Thanks to the researches of Galton, Lombroso, Mosso, Otto Ammann, Ferry, Kraft Ebing, and others. If criminals are criminals by descent or by birth, it is not equally probable that slaves are slaves by the facts of their breed and ancestry. does it not also follow that the heroes and strong, powerful, resolute personalities have derived their solid stamina from their forefathers? Indeed, all history and all genealogies prove that this is a mathematical fact. Great men are ever the descendants of mighty warriors and conquerors, that is to say, of mighty animals. Von Otto Ammann cites a remarkable instance which goes to prove the selective and ethnic advantages of warfare. He states that all German children born during the Franco-Prussian campaign of 71, also the years immediately following, show a strikingly high average of excellence both in body and mind. The converse is equally demonstrable. Show me a herd of humans who have been underfed day drudges from their youth up, and I'll show you a herd of cattle whose ancestors were also propertyless vassals and serfs, beaten in diplomacy and in war for ages past. Take the Irish peasantry and the fellaheen of Egypt as examples. This statement admits of no qualification, for if one exception can be discovered, it will serve to prove the general rule. A man in full possession of his faculties, of leonine ancestry, well-born, self-contained, would rather cut his own throat from ear to ear with a blacksmith's rasp than live the life of an average hired laborer in any civilized hell on earth. The nexus between self-mastership and breed is of tremendous significance. Therein is the lost secret. Undoubtedly, newborn infants are daily coming wailing into this world with words statesman, tramp, wastrel, warrior, priest, philosopher, criminal, thief, king, slave, and coward indelibly branded upon their brows, their hearts, and the brains. Our talents and our virtues and our vices depend entirely upon our individual mechanism. And that mechanism is the result of countless chemic transformations extended over ages, but modified to a large extent by climate and soil. What is bred to the bone will never come out of the flesh, wrote Pilpay thousands of years ago. There is a pregnant ethnic philosophy in four lines quoted from Karamos. Quote, this clay well mixed with marl and sand follows the motion of my hand, for some must follow and some must command, though all are made of clay. Although all may be made of clay in the poetic sense, it must never be forgotten that the clay itself is composed of differentiating elements. The clay that is in the blackfellow or the Chinaman is not the clay that is in Shakespeare or a Bismarck. Some clay will grow good wheat and make every very bad bricks, just as some breeds of animals are born to be hunters and others born to be hunted. Some clay will raise splendid crops, even from poor seed, and some never produces anything, no matter how highly cultivated, except thorns and weeds and nettles and poisons. The natures of man are molded almost entirely by the nature of the soil of which they have been grown. Man is perambulating crop. In some places, he grows to perfection. In other locations, he won't grow at all or runs to seed. In India, the Anglo-Saxon dwines and dwindles, but in Canada and the northern states, he even develops increased stamina. All science, all history, all experience are unanimous in disproof of equal natural rights for all men. That strident doctrine of the fool. And yet the insolent, proofless assertions of a Zeno or a Jefferson, a Jack Cade, a Robespierre, or a Jewish carpenter, when fantastically engrossed and framed on or bound in a book, are passively accepted by the intellectual serfs of this degenerate 19th century, and trumpeted to the ends of the earth as a sublime and holy revelation. Equalitism passes almost unchallenged in public oratory, because to open the question, its veracity is felt to be unpopular, and with the ignoble leaders of public opinion in all democracies, popularity is everything. The Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the result of Anglo-Saxondom is simply nauseous. Young men are mentally mutilated systematically, educated by schools, press, and literature upon fundamental hallucinations, pyrotechnic shams, and glittering illusions. Illusions that are the perennial source of fruitless servile uprisings, social heartburnings, internecine unpleasantness, and sundry of other secondary symptoms of social cancer. Our government educational systems are absolutely under the direct control of politicians. These priests of the state select and train the teachers, vote the salaries, and dictate what truths and lies the textbooks shall contain. Indeed, our national schools are managed upon the same Jesuitic plan, whereby the monks and the prelates of old successfully worked the universal church. Come right in here, and we'll improve your mind free of costs, suavely said the high priest of this new idolatry, this devouring dragon, this impersonal state. So the pure heart, rosy-cheeked, little ones enter unsuspectingly. Gradually, as they are brought under the influence, the gray brain pulp is forced out of plastic young skulls, and lies, nice, pretty, poetic lies, mixed with unavoidable facts and perverted truths, skillfully injected. Did you ever see medical students extract the brain of a frog and then fill up the vacuum with pith? The frog does not die. It lives, hops about, quite lively, and seems to possess its former intelligence and vitality. But it is an illusion. What experimental vivisectionists do to frogs, state priests do to children of men. Bit by bit, with dates and lists and emasculating histories, the iniquitous, brain-wrecking deviltry proceeds. When complete, young men and women are turned out with addled brains into warring world, incapables, semi-imbeciles, unable to defend or assert themselves. Footballs of fate, ready to serve anyone. Is it not notorious and ineptitude, mechanical imitativeness, and want of initiative displayed by the state-educated young men? Instead of being urged to think and act for themselves, they are taught like well-drilled slaves to believe and obey. They're even trained to glorify and worship idols with student shouts and modulating canticles. Not honest idols of wood and stone, but idols of sheepskin, bound pamphlets, variegated rags, and the falsified renown of dead scoundrels, i.e. statesmen. It requires a stout rope, a firm post, and a muscular man to hold an unbroken colt. But when by force the petting he has once been subdued, tamed, educated, saddled, bridled, he may be led anywhere, even with a piece of twine in the hands of a little child. O ye state priests, so adroit, so eloquent, ye cunning demons, ye wolves in sheep's clothing, ye corruptors of youth, ye generation of vipers, how can you escape from the wrath to come? How can you escape someday from being hung up by the tongue on the red-hot hooks of a real live hell? 30 years ago, the United States quixotically essayed to demonstrate racial equality with rifle butts and bombshells, but failed most ignominiously. Southern valleys were strewn with northern and southern bones and millions of taxpayers blown from the lips of cannons without any tangible results, except to demonstrate before an interested world the utter failure and hollowness of equality principles. A people that deliberately enters upon a gigantic war in order to firmly establish a centralized despotism and at the same time reduce itself to the social level of the Negro and the Russian Jew, the coolie and the Chinaman and the European serf must indeed, to use a suggestive vernacularism, have wheels in its head. The man and brother lie has certainly succeeded in writing itself in the constitutional amendment, but in real life it is far from actually as ever was. The free Negro of New Orleans or Charleston is a more degraded, more despised being and of less money value to his proprietors now than when it was customary to buy and sell him at the auction block instead of at the present on the stock exchange. What the late Civil War really accomplished was to degrade the white slave to the lower level of the plantation nigger. And in that respect, it was triumphant, triumph of ingenuity. The whites fought, actually fought each other to demonize themselves. Equality? Equality! What brilliant deeds have been perpetrated in that name. Lincoln, however, was he not a great statesman? Decidedly he was. Well, indeed, he knew how to round up the herd with bewitching phrases. Hark! Do you hear those drunken slaves caterwauling down the street? Lo, it is election night. Hurrah, hurrah, they sing. We'll sound the jubilee. Glory to be Lincoln, the man who made us free. In Morocco, the eunuchs and other menials bless their fate and the prince. And the very time he condescends to cut their throats with his own hands. Americans, however, are freeborn people, not to be duped that way. Throughout both northern and southern states, the social chasm between the highest and lowest human organisms, whether white or black or tan, is even more pronounced now than it ever was previously. For example, although Negroes are a majority in many states, they are never permitted to attain actual administrative power, and it says here they never will. Well, you were mistaken about that. You cannot paint the Negro white with laws and constitutions, though you write it in the fire and smoke of wars and revolutions. To solemnly proclaim that all men are created equal is as stupid and unscientific as to assert that all dogs, cattle, apes, and trees are created equal. Are there not as many diverse varieties of dogs, cattle, apes, and trees as there are men, planets, germs, stars, and suns? Where then is the intrinsic equality between an oak tree and a currant bush, between a meddlesome wolfhound and a yelping streetcar, between a buffalo bull and a hand-fed steer, between an untamable gorilla of the woods and an organ grinder's castrated monkey? Between a cosmic-brained Bismarck and that famous Christling, the good young man who died, cannot be blooded, bulldog-whipped, a solid score of lean, half-starved street mongrels. Upon exactly the same principle, a small body of bold, self-reliant, brainy men are ever more than a match under any circumstances for 10,000, nay, 10 million greasy mechanics. What is a mechanic, anyhow, but a specially trained slave? And it would take the spirit of 1,000 American slaves to make that of one live man. Theoretically, all these organisms are the same species, but in the savage rush for bread, love, space, life, there is as much functional difference between them as there is between a royal Bengal tiger and Mary's little lamb. The lamb was made to be eaten, and the tiger was made to eat it. And man was born to struggle as the sparks fly upwards. And that's the end of my reading for today. And we'll be back Moonsday. And that will be, according to plan, Sling Blade Day. Did I say Stray Dog in the beginning? I'm wrong. Stray Dog, when he does the show, is on Tuesday. So Monday you'll get Sling Blade. Yeah. In the meantime, watch it. You're surrounded by idiots. You're led by idiots. You worship idiots. So 14:5 and shut up.